Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of RealCom Live. First of all, I just want to say thank you to Howard for covering last week. I did a great job, and it's good to be back. So this week, another incredible, exciting topic. As you all know, we scan the planet for innovation, and specifically as it relates to technologies, companies, but most specifically, real estate projects. And we are very, very fortunate today to have two folks with us to talk about a very special project in Austin, Texas, what some are calling the most intelligent building in Austin, if not all of Texas, and some may even start to think in the United States. So with that, before we start, I'm gonna have a quick video run to give you some context and understand the scope of this project. Then we're gonna bring on these two senior executives and we're gonna have a great conversation. All right, let's bring in our two guests, Eric Karen, Managing Director of Development and Construction from Stream, and a good friend, Thana Lambrino, Senior Vice President, Digital Buildings, Experience and Innovation from QuadReal. Guys, how are you? I think we might have Thana on mute.
There we go. Fantastic.
How are you?
Thank you. I think we're great. I'm great. Thank you for having us. It's always a pleasure to join RealCom Live.
Eric, how about you? How are you doing?
Doing well. Can you hear me?
We can. Sounds great.
Thanks for having us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, so I got to tell you, I have literally traveled the world looking for smart buildings, have stood on top of Dubai, Burj Khalifa, Shanghai Tower while it was being built under construction. And I got to tell you, I think you guys have something pretty special here. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is, when you say smart buildings, so much of it can be the back end of the building, where the engineers are running around with iPads and checking systems and everything. But what I'm really impressed with this project is how you brought the technology forward and allowed the tenants to really start to feel and experience something different. So with that, why don't we start with Eric? And Eric, give us high level. Before we do that, why don't we talk about your relationship? Thana, sure. Why don't you talk about how QuadReal found Stream in Austin, Texas?
Absolutely. What I will say is that the partnership between Stream and QuadReal has been fantastic to date. We're equity partners on this project. Stream are our local developers and operations managers post-substantial completion. And typically on projects like this, QuadReal doesn't necessarily get terribly involved in the day-to-day with respect to the development construction of the site. We're more focused on asset management and on the investment. But as we've built out and grown, it's become very important to us to ensure that our digital strategy is deployed not only in our domestic portfolio in Canada, but throughout the world. So when Eric and I met, we started talking about some of the opportunities that we had with River South to really differentiate it from the market and other product that was going up in the market and really make it stand out as a jewel south of the river. And I will say that Eric and his team were nothing but accommodating and open and innovative in their way of thinking to help us bring this vision to life.
So Eric, what did you think about this crazy guy, Thana, when he starts throwing all these ideas at you? What was your first impression?
We started the project and we actually started construction when QuadReal kind of came to us and said, hey, we got this guy, Thana, we want to tell you about smart building. And we haven't done any of it before, frankly, in our portfolio. Every building's got the same systems. And so he taught me very quickly that the integration of the brain and spinal cord of the building so that these systems can talk to and control one another. And then the idea of changing the tenant experience by allowing them to interact with the building in different ways. And in many ways, it's ways that they're used to, because the users of our buildings do these things at home. And so, and especially kind of coming, I think we kind of lucked in timing wise, and people don't think of COVID as a positive necessarily. But for us, it's been a positive because all these people that have spent the last year at home and maybe working from home, and they've had a smart home, and they have smart building functions at home. Then they come back to the office, and it's almost like going back in time. And so for us, I think the timing is perfect. I think people are I think employers are basically competing against a home environment to get people back into their offices, and the smart building technology is going to do nothing but help.
So Thano, I've known you long enough, and I know the number of projects you've been involved with. You know, you're in that first meeting, you're sharing your ideas, everybody's nodding their heads, but you know, they may not be paying attention, right? What made Stream different? How did you know they were embracing the ideas and that they were going to be a good partner?
I mean, from the first call that I had with Eric and his team, there was pushback, but not from Stream. The pushback was from the trades and the constructors who were just uncertain, and they saw it as a risk. And the fact that that Stream was immediately supportive, we were able to demonstrate that this is something that we've done before, that we developed processes and procedures and standards that we'd be able to help and guide the trades, the manufacturers, the contractors, the architects on how to effectively implement this technology without disrupting the budget, without disrupting the schedule, and only enhancing the way that we bring the asset to life. So it was a very top-down collaborative approach between Stream and Quadreal to the trades. And you know, as always with us, we don't just come in with our ideas and run away. We've had folks hand in hand with Stream through the entire project to make sure that the vision gets delivered as we articulated it early on.
So, I mean, when you do a project like this, ultimately it has to start with a vision, right? I mean, an overall vision of what, why, and how this building is going to be different. Eric, give us an idea of some of the vision, goals, and big picture objectives of the project.
Yeah,
I think we have a slide with this.
Yeah, I do. If you we'll put up the slide. The next slide is our strategic drivers for the project, and so why this is the why do we go to the next slide? Why do we do this, right? Why would we partake in something that's going to cost more money that makes everybody uncomfortable? And these are our strategic drivers. Reduce energy and cost. I don't think there's near enough attention put on this. As we've learned throughout the process, it's hard. Nobody's in a multi-tenant building. This hasn't been done a lot. And so how do we prove this? Well, we're gonna prove it with this building. And we just kind of took the hard line that there's no reason this building doesn't operate more effectively and less costly than our competition. Enhanced experience. It's a big one for tenants. We want them to have that experience like they do at home. Improve utilization of the building itself, and efficiency kind of goes right along with that. Mitigate risk. So a lot of risk in people not coming to the office, and so there's a lot of risk factors there. But number six is really kind of the key, right? If us as developers can't increase revenue, why would we put this technology in our building? And so through all the things above, we believe we can get rental rate increases and increase tenant retention.
You know, and that last bullet, increase revenue, I've been running around the world for 25 years saying that. And Thano has been on this journey for a long time as well. I mean, you say that, and then you would just watch, you know, the people's eyes roll back and they run for the door because they really didn't believe it. You know, but I remember in a meeting once somebody said, can you imagine if every building was like Disneyland with people waiting at the front door to get in? Meaning that building was so special, so unique, so different that it was just a better place to be. And I think COVID actually, you know, really brought that to light where, you know, the proverbial cube farm, you know, where you just go in like cattle and sit at these desks and there's no air, there's no light, nobody cares about wellness, fresh air, you know, and lighting. And I think now, as the smart building journey continued, COVID just threw some gasoline on it. Thano, do you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We were never busier than we were through the lockdowns and through the quarantines that we had to go through early on in COVID, because it became very apparent that the technology that enables all of these outcomes were going to be critical. The outcomes themselves were incredibly critical. How do we make sure that people are healthy in the office and feel safe and comfortable in their environments? How do we give them that level of transparency and visibility into real-time operating conditions? How do we bridge that gap between the building and the user so that they can create those experiences and, as Eric alluded to, want to come back? You know, your home environment is pretty nice when you've got automated thermostats and lighting and security systems, which a lot of folks have now. And now we're giving that same type of experience in the work environment. And then from a front-end perspective, and then from a real estate management and an operational perspective, creating platforms and integrations that allow the tenants to better manage their own space and allow the operators to better manage the building to create a better experience end to end. So it was always something that was really important that we wanted to accomplish, but then COVID just put a magnifier on the fact that we needed to do it, and we needed to do it now. And thankfully, the folks at Stream and QuadReal were already dedicated to that vision before COVID hit, so that when it did, we were ready to go.
Ready to go. So before we take a break, real quick, 15 seconds or less to each of you. Number one challenge you encountered in the process. We'll start with Eric.
My biggest challenge has been talking a bunch of Texas tradesmen into trusting the guy from Canada that shows up and with these new ideas. We're moving their food dish. I mean, they're used to doing things a certain way. They've done it 30 years this way, and we're saying there's a better way. And so it is a challenge. It's been one of our biggest.
Dano, how about you?
Yeah, very similarly, teaching the trades, the manufacturers, and everybody that they're not operating in silos anymore, that they need to collaborate across the project to create these integrations, that we need to create standards across the project with data strategies and specifications that they're not necessarily used to and they don't necessarily like. But that was probably the biggest issue. But like I said, what I will say is
it still is.
Yeah. If you've got a project team that's dedicated to it, we're going to prove it when this building opens. It's absolutely possible.
Change is hard. And I remember the first smart building I ever saw was not in this country. It's been probably a 25-year journey. And it all boils back to change management. The technology's there. You can stitch it together. But it's a cohesive team with one vision working together to pull something unique off. So, all right, let's take a brief break and hear from one of our sponsors, and then we're going to get into some specific features of the building that make it so special. And continue our conversation. So, you know, a little bit of progress. I mean, a year and a half ago, none of our industry solution providers had commercials, and now most of them do. So we're making progress. All right, let's start, Eric. Give us, and then I've been, Thano, I absolutely want you to join in on this. Let's start talking about some of the features, the specific things tenants will see, feel, touch, and smell that make this building different. Eric?
Yeah, I want to start. So the next slide, I'll pull up the slide. I'll show you kind of our use cases or that kind of have driven us. And I want to also add that, like, this list grows. Like, it's growing every day. We find new ways to use the technology that we're adding to the building, and new technologies come about. So this slide kind of captures at least our starting point for what the things that we wanted to accomplish with the building. The first four on the left side are pretty much, in my mind, required. Like, they're kind of the basis for the rest of it. A converged operating, a GPON this is the spinal cord and operating system for the building's operation. The UUI, same thing. That's the stuff that Thano understands a lot better than I do. Thano, I don't know if you want to say anything more about those, but the bottom line is, like, without those, nothing else happens.
Yeah, I think that we very quickly and very early on determined, as we've done across our portfolio at QuadReal, that the converged connectivity infrastructure and the integrated software platform that supported operations was critical. And then on the other side, the integrated platform on the mobile app for the tenant services was also critical, because without those, there's absolutely no way to deliver these services to the different user types. And very unique to Austin, tenant submetering wasn't something that was very commonly put in place. And that was a big thing that that Eric pushed and that we pushed for on the project to ensure that we could help quantify the value of some of the things that we were doing from a technology side to the tenants through energy.
One of the things on this left side that I really, that's really important, I think, in a multi-tenant building, and really it's the only way we can, you know, which why the reason I put it on the left side is because without it, it doesn't work. Especially when you're trying to sell smart building tenants, is this tenant sub-metering portion of the project. In our market, sub-metering of tenants in an office building doesn't happen. We basically do provide tenants with a pro-rata share of the energy they use, of the energy that the building uses. And so we're spending a lot of time in sub-metering tenants to the point that we know exactly, we give them a bill at the end of every month where they know exactly the energy they use. And that's a collection of electrical panels. It's a collection of the controls, the mechanical controls of the system, being able to identify who's called for air and what space of the building, and making sure that they pay for it. And so that one is really critical to a multi-tenant building, because if you don't have that tenant sub-metering, now an individual tenant is less apt to go spend a little more money in making a smart building if they don't get the savings that's associated with that. And so, right. So they go spend a little more money in their space, and then they're the ones that save on their electrical bill.
You know, it's funny when I look at that slide, I remember in 2004, we took a small contingency of real estate owners to Asia. And we went from Tokyo all the way down through Singapore. And on that trip was a guy named Matt Spathis. I don't know if that name rings a bell for anybody, but Matt was with a company called Century Partners out of San Diego. And he came back all hyped. And he said, I'm going to take One America Plaza, which at the time was the tallest building in San Diego. And I said, I'm going to make it smart. And I was fortunate enough to be in that first meeting when he had all the different systems guys, the HVAC, the lighting, and he looked at them, just like I'm sure you guys did, and he said, you know, all of you guys, you never work together, but we're going to put this thing called the network in this building, and you're all going to jump on it. And if I would have had a camera to catch their expressions, that picture would have been priceless. But I'm sure you guys went through the same thing. But what I would like to talk about maybe for 30 seconds is, why, you know, 2004 to today, that's, you know, what, 16 years, 17 years. Why is it taking so long industry?
Yeah, for sure. We've talked about this before, Jim, at length, and it's the same challenges that we had at the beginning of the project. And as Eric said, moving the food dish is a challenging thing to do when you're doing it at so many links through the value chain and through the supply chain, all the way from the architects to the GCs to the trades to the manufacturers underneath them, and getting them to work in a different way. And there's risk on these projects that is introduced when you do some of this type of smart technology deployment that they're just not used to. And it's more perceived risk than it is real risk, because as we've proven, it can be executed near flawlessly as long as folks talk to each other. So I think it's been mostly fear and mostly the unwillingness to break the status quo, if you will.
Okay, I got 3 minutes left, so I'm going to need you to answer a real quick question, and then I got one final question for you. Favorite feature of the building? Start with Daniel.
Oh, I don't even know where to begin. We put so much into this building. I'm going to say it's end-to-end connectivity in terms of the services that we can provide. Being able to operationally understand the occupancy of one of the amenities to condition for HVAC and lighting to optimize for energy, but leveraging that same data to communicate it to the tenant through the mobile app to say, hey, the restaurant or the fitness center or the showers are too busy right now, or that, you know, there's too many people, so take your time or pick a different time to come down. So that end-to-end connectivity and the ability to leverage data from operations to corporate real estate management for the tenants, and then the end user and the employee themselves, is going to be absolutely unparalleled in the market.
In the computer world, we would call that the hardware level, the connectivity, the network, which then everything else then lays on top of. And we've been talking about this thing called the base building network for a while, and people like you just implement it without even thinking about it.
It's the network, it's the IoT sensing devices that we've deployed, it's the software platforms and the complete seamless integration between all of them so that we can deliver these user stories that Eric and I spent so much time and his team and our team spent so much time trying to define.
Eric, favorite feature, 30 seconds.
That's a really tough question, and that one I think I can answer. I think one feature, all buildings have these features, right? It's really about the fact that they communicate to each other. Knowing how people use our buildings, we've been operating buildings for hundreds of years, and we still don't know what people do when they come in the door, once they get past the door. And so just the data that's possible for us to understand, both on a tenant basis and as a manager or owner of a building, it's going to be really exciting down the line once we start understanding how people move from around the building, how they use conference rooms, how they use spaces. And I think what it's going to do, it's going to yield better buildings in the future. And so we're excited to have that data so that we can build better buildings in the future. It's really exciting.
So unfortunately, we are out of time. I know there's a couple more questions I wanted to get to, but that's an excuse to have you guys back, okay? And what we might even like to do, Eric, if it's okay, get you mobile next time and get you inside the building.
Sure.
Maybe have a show. You can show us a few of these things. I mean, there's nothing like using our technology to get this message out. So I think that would be a nice follow-up to this episode where you're actually in the building and walking us around, and Thano can give us some color commentary, and I think the audience would enjoy that.
Well, I'm hoping I can be down there with them the next time we do that.
All right. So before you guys go, I'm about to bring Howard in to do the news, but a little announcement. My good friend Howard Berger is celebrating a very special birthday in the next couple of days. So I want to embarrass him and tell him happy birthday. happy birthday.
Yeah. And, I wasn't going to make that public, but thank you.
Well, we're not. I want to be like you when I grow up. So let's hope we all do as well as you do. But I just wanted to make sure our audience knew it, Thano and Eric knew it, and wish you a happy. On behalf of RealCom, we wish you a happy birthday.
Well, thank you, Jim, and thank you, Eric and Thano. This you guys nailed it. Great conversation on River South.
Yeah,
one
thank
of the
guys.
Projects we've seen yet.
Absolutely.
And with that, thank Howard's going to give us the weekly news. Thank you.
All right. So with that, each week we highlight a few stories from our weekly news briefing. We release every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific. And this week's lead article is from David Gazek, CEO Gazek Consulting. And David's advising some of the largest commercial real estate firms on their organizational development strategies. Now, for years, the industry is just moving along nicely, normal ups and downs. And then March 2020, it all went to you know what. So now there are multiple forces converging, which may very well change the trajectory of commercial real estate, at least for a while, if not forever. And our commercial real estate leaders are now faced with making a lot of decisions on how to best deal with this unprecedented set of challenges. Now, we all know change is a given. Leaders prepare their organizations for it. But this pandemic catalyzed, I think, a fundamental shift in human behavior. It's going to impact the way we use commercial real estate. We know that. But what we don't know yet is how deep or sustainable the impact will be. So for leaders of commercial real estate organizations, if you're a landlord or a tenant, for you guys who proactively get out in front of these challenges and opportunities, you'll be in a position to lead change process and not be swept up by it, wondering what happened. So I highly recommend this important article. Great read. Second, shout out to this week's tech partner, Igor Technologies. And this article from Igor is on a topic near and dear to my heart about reducing energy consumption in buildings by replacing AC line voltage with intelligent PoE DC power. Think Ethernet cables, network switches to both control and power systems and devices. Now, in a previous episode, we showcased the Sinclair Hotel in Fort Worth, which is substantially DC powered, all the way down to refrigerators in the guest rooms. And not only was the CapEx on the infrastructure greatly reduced over traditional electrical installs, the Sinclair also enjoyed lower OpEx and overall energy consumption. Plus, everything is already networked and controllable from a single pane of glass. Now, this technology is truly amazing. Works even for retrofits, yields lower cost, better services, and reduced carbon. So great article. Suggest you read it. Thanks, Igor Tech. On to the next. Again, JLL is strategically investing in prop tech companies, the most recent being Tel Aviv-based Skyline AI. Now, founded in 2017, Skyline They've developed a proprietary AI platform for ingesting data from hundreds of different sources, then applying artificial intelligence to analyze and exploit potential commercial real estate investment opportunities. Now, Skyline was one of the first of a handful of companies that took a quant approach to automating the commercial real estate investment analysis process. Now, JLL had been an investor since 2018. Early on, they saw the power of Skyline AI's platform to transform commercial real estate, which they're going to now be using to help clients better predict future property values and ultimately identify promising investment opportunities. I'm going to squeeze in one more. We've hit a sad chapter in the evolution of this pandemic. I think you all know now, in an effort to stem the spread of the virus and to increase vaccination rates in response to rising caseloads of the Delta variant, Mayor Bill de Blasio announced new requirements for indoor activities. Now, New Yorkers, as of Monday, you need proof of vaccination and masks to go to the gym, attend performances, dine in restaurants, although outdoor dining, I think, is still going to be permitted. So look for similar restrictions in other areas of the country, and especially in cities like Los Angeles. Unfortunately, folks, I'm out of time. That's it for me today, but there's much more in our weekly briefing. Check it out, and I'll see you all next week.
Howard, thank you so much. Great, great job. And I just hope you have a great birthday weekend and drink a little of that good scotch for me. So
I will. Thank you, Jim.
All right. Thank you. All right. Well, that concludes a great episode of RealCom Live. Two great guests, great news. Nancy and team, thanks for production. Before I introduce next week's show, we're going to take hear from our final sponsor, and then I'm going to come back and wrap the show. All right, so that wraps another week. And next week, we are going to dive again into the world of industrial estate. A couple of weeks back, we had the CIO of Prologis on, and we had a great conversation on some of the things that were going on, not just in Prologis, but in the industry. And next week, we're going to have Will O'Donnell from Prologis Ventures. Will's at the center of all the technology initiatives, new companies. He's working with their entire team on finding companies that are really bringing innovative approaches to the industrial marketplace, similar yet a little different perspective than Sunish. So with that, I am looking forward to talking with Will next week, and I want to say thank you for your time and joining us today, and we will see you next Friday. Be well.